So good to be back here on this day after Earth Day. And as some of you know, I was able to be on retreat for 4 weeks at Spirit Rock from late February to late March. And it was, for me personally, wonderful to be on that retreat. I stayed mostly in my own room, practicing, and would take a few walks a day, typically before and after the meals. I participated fully in the three meals every day and enjoyed that. Actually, one of my practices was to bring metta to all the meals. So 2 hours plus of metta every day. Very wonderful. I keep that going at home quite a bit as well. And it was during the storm, so I had known that there might be stormy. I brought rain gear and was outside quite a bit during the storms, which was, what can I say, enjoyable, powerful. And I wanted just to, tonight I want to talk about one of the themes that came up in the retreat. But I just want to mention some of the ones that came up. First of all, personally, I love retreats. And I just love being away from everyday activities and devoting myself to a process that I love and that is wonderful, involving learning and development and insight. Metta, again, was one of the themes of the retreat. I also worked several hours a day with body practices that develop the subtle energy of the body. And that was quite powerful. That sort of the result is turning the body into a radiant, flow of sparkling energy, which tends to merge with the sparkling energy of the outside. So inside and outside tend to be inseparable. Also focus quite a bit on the continuity of awareness as much as possible all the time. Another theme was just somewhat related to the one tonight, but having interest in just the process of awakening and how it's closely connected to everything in the process, including moments of habitual energy or contraction or not seeing clearly. So seeing everything as part of awakening was another theme. Towards the end, I gave a little bit of attention to a theme which I knew there was from the beginning, which comes up a lot on retreats for most people, you know, being away from the everyday routine and schedule, a question of how can I best use my time? What's the best use of my time? Still an ongoing inquiry, because some of what is most important in my life, you know, continuing to deepen in practice and for me, also writing and teaching that offers what I can uniquely offer and time with those close to me. I don't always have or make enough time for that. So a question I looked into and still looking into is again, a question that often is there for us on retreats is what's the best use of my time? Do I need to let go of something? What's really calling most deeply? What shifts to make? A further theme that I want to explore this evening could be said to be the theme of the sacramental nature of every moment, of how, in the context of the awakening process, everything could be seen as, again, using more Christian language, as a sacrament, as something sacred, even what is very ordinary, even the washing of the dishes, or the fixing of the meal, or the taking of the walk, or taking care of something with my body, or meditation, or sleep and rest. Can there be a way of taking everything in our lives as, in a sense, sacred, as a sacrament? Even when we get lost, even when there's contraction. Interestingly, a week ago, maybe no coincidence, I taught in Sacramento. Sorry for the bad joke. But that's interesting. I had never previously thought of where does the name Sacramento come from? What's that about? Right? Interesting. The actual etymology of the word is for sacrament. The first part is related to sacred and actually comes from a translation from the Greek. The word sacrament comes out of the Latin and is related to a translation from the Greek of a word meaning mystery. So there's a way that taking everyday life and taking details of everyday life is sacramental, that there's a, can we can see a sacred quality to everything? What's it like to see everything like that, rather than seeing some things as special and some things as not? So I want to explore this topic, and in a way, it's sharing my own exploration with you. And, you know, when we talk together, we'll look at the theme, and I'll invite us, if it resonates with us, to explore this in the next week. I'll share some of my explorations. I'll give some references, actually, from different spiritual traditions. I'll point to some ways of practicing that occurred to me, some things that support this way of seeing everyday life as sacramental, some things that get in the way. So I think the term comes especially from the Christian tradition, and some of you may, from your own history, have a sense of that. It's a particularly related to, I think, in Christian tradition, seven ceremonies, which are taken to impart a kind of grace, including the Eucharist and baptism and so forth. But I'm more interested in some of the perspectives that come from different traditions, from contemplative and mystical traditions. And I just wanted to refer to a few of those. You know, I think one can find this in many of the Christian mystics and contemplatives, Jewish mystics, Buddhist practitioners. Here are just a few examples that to me speak very much of this perspective, of this attitude. There was a 17th century friar who lived in France named Brother Lawrence. whose sayings were compiled and are available now. One can look at a book called Practicing the Presence of God. And just a few words from Brother Lawrence. He said that it is enough for me to pick up a straw from the ground to experience the love of God. He was a cook and came to see all of his activities. This was his practice, really, as reflecting a communion with the divine, whatever he was doing. And we can translate this, I think, in the Buddhist practice. Another line from Brother Lawrence, he said, God paints herself, he didn't say herself, but God paints himself or herself in the depths of our soul. We must merely open our hearts to receive God and God's loving presence. And from the Jewish tradition, from the, I think we find this very much in the Hasidic tradition. One teacher said, when I was with my teacher, I came to be with him, not to hear him speak, but to see how he tied his shoelaces. Do we have that same sense of the sacredness of tying the shoelace? From the founder of the Hasidic tradition, the Baal Shem Tov, he said, the world is full of enormous lights and mysteries, and one shuts themselves off from oneself with one little hand. The world is full of enormous lights and mysteries. And from the Buddhist tradition, interestingly, I don't know how much we find this with the actual teachings of the Buddha. Sometimes there's the emphasis of getting away from the ordinary world, you know, of the distinction of samsara and nirvana. But we do find it very much in the Zen tradition. I think we know the sense that everything is a sacred act. A monk once asked Tozan, a teacher, when he was weighing some flax, what is Buddha? Tozan said, this flax weighs 3 pounds. Similarly, a monk asked Joshu, why did Bodhidharma come to China? Joshu's answer, an oak tree in the garden. I think we find this also with Ajahn Chah at times in the Thai forest tradition. This is from Ajahn Chah. Everywhere you look is the Dharma. Constructing a building, walking down the road, sitting in the bathroom, or in the meditation hall. All of this is Dharma. When you understand correctly, there is nothing in the world that is not Dharma. So how do we see that? You know, there are dangers in the way Buddhist practice has come to much of the Western world and sort of mainstream insight meditation, where we think of practice especially, I think we all know this, as formal meditation. And it's very common conversation for between two insight meditation practitioners for one to say, how's your practice going? And the answer is, it's going quite well. I'm getting in 30 minutes a day. How many have heard such conversations or used them yourself, right? So there's something both valuable in that comment, but something missing, you know? And so sometimes everyday life is a second thought that we focus, especially on the formal meditation. So I want to share some of what to me seems to help with this sense of everyday life, a sacrament. And it's especially for one of the ways that it's come alive for me is seeing the activities as inseparable from awakening. It's not just meditation. I don't awaken without eating. My meals are connected with awakening. So sometimes my experience of exploring the sense of everyday life as sacramental is just reflecting, just stopping for a moment. This is part of the process of awakening. And just very ordinary things, brushing my teeth, taking care of myself, taking 5 minutes to clean a counter, and reflecting, maybe before I begin or at the moment, this is part of the process of awakening. And my sense is when that happens, it can be alive. There may be more sense of presence or awareness, but it's also a shift in perspective. You know, and we think we cut through some of what makes it hard to see our everyday lives as sacrament, whatever the habitual tendencies, the doing something to get somewhere else, doing something so we can get and, get somewhere we want to be. So we don't pay attention to something or we don't value it. So this has multiple perspectives. It's connected with more awareness, but also with a perspective. This meal is necessary for awakening. Even this contraction of mind and noticing it, this getting lost, part of the process of awakening. We can see it having a sacred quality, getting lost, having contraction, resting, sleeping. We can maybe see it like that, seeing that as sacred, helping others. One person I talked to who I work with, had that sense when she said, I clearly help someone here. I filled a hole in the world. That can be a sense of the sacredness of that, the sacredness of helping someone in a very simple way. Maybe for some of us, kindness or compassion can open us up to that sense of the sacramental nature of things. Recognizing that it's the same mind that gets stuck as awakens. So partly this is perspective. And it's seeing what gets in the way of seeing the sacred nature of the daily flow or the details of it. Of course, every time the mind is contracted, maybe with anxiety or fear, or the heart gets closed down, that openness to the sacred or the mystery isn't there. Maybe another thing that gets in the way is being overly preoccupied with doing something, especially to finish it and get somewhere else. Sort of an instrumental attitude, doing in order to get somewhere else and not really resting in the doing. So the doing can be a means to an end. And it's related to how we organize time, future orientation that is sort of overly preoccupied with the future makes that sense of the sacred very hard. Maybe more accessible to us would be to ask, what really opens us up to this sense of the sacred moment, the sacred nature of moment after moment? What helps us? Some things that I have seen in exploring this, a sense of mystery, a sense of the mystery of the moment. Again, remembering that the very word sacred came out of a translation from a word that means mystery. How do we have a sense of mystery? Sometimes we can invite that. Sometimes in my own meditation practice, I invite a sense of mystery right at the beginning. So I am less likely to just be trying to get to some state or another. And I'm opening myself up to the unknown, being with the unknown, and appreciating sort of the sacredness of the unknown. It's related very much to being in the present moment, can open us up in this way to the sacred, just to live in a more present-centered way. I think gratitude and appreciation can also open us up. Maybe a sense of awe. Can we invite a sense of awe of mystery? What would it be like to live with a sense of awe and mystery and the unknown much of the day? My experience, it goes against a lot of the habits. Again, maybe a moment of connection. We're entering into something sacred, this deep and simple kindness and being helpful. If we get stuck or there's some kind of difficulty with another person, forgiveness can sometimes open us up to a sense of the sacred. It gets us unstuck. Forgiveness, or really allowing others to be themselves, not needing to control how others are. I remember my colleague Larry Yang talking about a form of forgiveness in which we forgive reality for being as it is. Or in the Jewish tradition, one rabbi actually had a practice of forgiving God. It's offering a sense of the okayness and the way that whatever is happening, even other people acting in a way that triggers me, is part of my process of awakening. Of course, my meditation practice and ritual, maybe art. What helps us to have a sense of everyday life as sacramental? Maybe certain activities really have that sense. I have that sense sometimes when I go swimming and I'm in the water. And this very beautiful quality of being away from gravity can be almost like a sacred quality of immersing myself in water. There may be activities, maybe creativity does that for many of us. How many, when there's a process of creativity, have something like that sense of the sacred manifesting? Maybe simplicity. One person I talked to said, what really helps me have a sense of the sacramental nature of daily life are a lot of post-its, which remind me. having post-its on your walls or refrigerator. So let me give a closing, again, two references to this. And really, I'd like to invite your joining in with me on this exploration. The first is something that we may know from Paul Reps. You know, the story of him drinking tea. And I think this is close to it. Some of you know the story. In the 1950s, he wanted to go from Japan to Korea to meet his Zen teacher. And he went to the passport office to get his visa, but this was right after the Korean War had started. And the passport officer told him that he couldn't get a visa. He wouldn't offer him a visa. Paul Reps then went to get his thermos. He poured a cup of tea from his thermos. He drank his tea. After finishing his tea, he took out a piece of paper and some paint and a brush. And he wrote a short poem, and it had a picture on it. The passport officer read the poem, and tears came into his eyes. And he smiled at Paul Reps and stamped his passport. There was a picture of a cup of tea and the words, "Drinking a bowl of green tea, I stopped the war." And then I'll come back to Achan Cha. Everywhere you look is the Dharma. Constructing a building, walking down the road, sitting in the bathroom, or here in the meditation hall. All of this is Dharma. When you understand correctly, there is nothing in the world that is not Dharma. So thank you for listening to my explorations. First time I've given a talk on this topic. And it's, again, part of my own exploration of my own practice coming up in the retreat and afterwards. So let me invite everyone just to sit quietly for a minute or two and see what comes to you. See if there is a sharing or a question. And for me, very much this sharing of my own explorations I can reflect and see this as part of the process of awakening, clarifying my own understanding and sharing it. Very ordinary in a certain way, but also inseparable from, for me, the awakening process. Let me invite Patty, please. And then Liz.
Thank you, Donald. I hope you give more talks on this subject. It's beautiful. The word sacramental does nothing for me, but the word holy or sacred works. It's the same concept. But as you were speaking, I thought of the two things that I think are absolutely necessary for me to have a sense of the sacred or the holy. One of them is slowing down. If I realize I'm rushing or I realize I'm in a hurry, it really, I can put the brakes on if I can frame it in the sense of you're not here now, you're rushing to the next thing.
Yeah.
So slowing down is crucial. The other thing that helps me is every morning I read poetry.
Wow.
And reading poetry just seems to open my heart in a way very few other things can do. And it reminds me of the sense that I live with. If someone I love has died, or someone has just been born, or if someone I love has just given birth, there seems to be a natural opening of the heart where everything seems holy.
Yeah.
And so reading poetry evokes that kind of feeling that I get when life is tender and I can see the holy aspect of everything in it.
Yeah, beautiful. And also reading poetry, it doesn't work very well to rush it. There's a slowing down.
Right.
Right. And of course, it's, you're talking about the slowing down as being very, very helpful. But of course, in principle, we could, sometimes we have to move fast, right? And with the right attitude, so to speak, or maybe, how should I say it? We could be moving very fast and still see it as holy and sacred. It's not the speed per se. It's the way that speed makes it harder for us to see that, but it doesn't make it impossible. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember having experience once when I was helping in the kitchen and we had to move very, very fast. But I was able to really stay very present. And it was really interesting to be moving really, really fast and still have that awareness and that center. But for most of us, the slowing down is crucial and not being in a rush, you know. Yeah, it's crucial. And then how many have similar experience with poetry, where poetry sort of brings out the sacred in certain ways? So thanks so much, Patty. Liz, please.
Hi, thanks for a lovely talk. I had the good fortune to be a cook at a Quaker retreat center for 2 years. And at Gampo Abbey, the monastery, I was the main cook for a year.
Wow.
And when you're living in that environment, it's not hard to see everything as sacred, and especially to be in the position of a cook, which I think in the Zen tradition is the most important person in the environment or the leader. And the other thing is, when old age hit me with a bang 3 years ago, and I really understood that I will die within the next 10 years, most likely, everything became sacred.
Mm.
Every moment is sacred, and every moment is leads to an awakening. That's the path I'm on, and I feel so lucky to be on it.
Wow.
And it I fell into it when I realized that the five invitations, I am of a nature to die, I'm of a nature to be old, to lose everything, and to begin to try to accept that, which is not easy. But I feel I am on the sacred path because my life will end soon. And there's nothing else to do but become. What else is there to do but to become awake? What else?
What else is there to do than to awaken? No?
Yes. Can't think of a thing.
Right. But you didn't fully have that consciousness 10 years ago, right?
No.
No. So,
go
ahead.
Yeah, although a few years ago, I was at Spirit Rock, sitting with Corey and Allison, and Allison turned to me and she said, "You're on the path." And I was stunned. After 25 years of practice, somebody turned to me and told me I was on the path. And I realized she was right. But nothing like approaching death.
Thank you. Thanks so much for bringing that in. And of course, that can be a continual awareness. It can be a practice that we do. And yeah, sounds very crucial. Of course, people can be aware of that, and it can be depressing and not bringing in the sacred, right? And then also, Liz, the experience of a cook, and after being a cook in those times, were you able to bring something like that into your daily life at times?
Well, also I was in a monastery where we were practicing all the time, and the Quaker Retreat Center, it was like a holy place. So I was aware of that in the place that I was living. It was part of the daily, part of our breath, our air.
And was that much harder when you were away from there?
I don't think so. I think it may have set the pattern. It may have set me on the path.
Yeah.
That's 3 years. 3 years is
all right,
a long
so
time.
I think, but you're bringing in the dimension of community, so crucial.
Yes.
For that sense and supports. And, you know, we can ask, I'm thinking out loud, but how do we have more community? You know? How do we support each other in this intention to take everyday life as whatever language works for us, as path, as a process of awakening, as sacred? You know, how do we support each other and keep connected? And so, yeah, thank you. Mary and then Mary. Mary.
So I just unmuted myself. So I have to say that I am very much what Patty and Liz said is very much true for me as well. And I find that for me, one of the things that's very helpful is to start my morning with the practice.
Yeah.
To start it, and then I can have an intention. And in order to I need to be here. I need to be here now. I need to be available to the moment just as it is. And kind of asking myself that. Am I available now? And if you're not here and I'm not available, then I'm going to miss. You know, how can I possibly recognize the grace and have reverence? I mean, it was a simple thing. My son took me out for an outing. It was for my birthday. I said, I don't want something. I would like an outing because that's what I want, my mom. And we were out, and then we were walking by, and there was like a little groundhog peeping its little head out of a hole, and it was so sweet and so cute. And we all just stopped and just kind of looked at it, and I'm thinking, like, this is like my brother. I mean, this is like another living thing that's right there with me. And it was just so sweet, and so it was like a real, for me, there's a real open heart tenderness to that, and just kind of keeping your heart open during the course of the day. You know, sometimes even when people, when people are doing something and I gotta say, my judging mind goes, boy, that's really stupid. But my heart will open up and go, you know, their life could possibly be hard if this is how they go about it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I get this little bit of grace that my heart can open for that. But the trick for me is I've got things in my watch telling me to stop. And I just try and do that as much as I can during the course of the day, is feel gravity, stop, and just be here. And you can do that, like you said, even when you're doing something quickly. The trick is not to be in the future, is to be present in the quickness.
Yeah.
And then that's okay. It's okay. But if I'm not here, I'm not living my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm also old too. So I just turned 74. How many more years do I think I'm going to live? And how do I want to go about that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's a real joyful feeling being present.
Mm.
You know, there really is. And I'd like to keep that in my life. So thank you for this talk. This is really valuable. And I think this is something that really is important to reflect upon, because Marina Sangha is about living the Dharma in daily life.
Yeah.
Cushion's nice, but it doesn't matter if you don't carry it through the day. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. It sounds like really that finding ways during the day just to remind yourself, to ask yourself a question, am I present? Just, we each have different ways of doing that, right? Yeah. And I think I love also that way in which simply being in the present moment, even if it's things aren't going well, can have an aspect of joy. And I remember this very significant moment once in a retreat where the big picture was, I was just really happy to be practicing. And it didn't really matter what was happening. And one morning, I didn't sleep well. I was tired. I was irritable. My body didn't feel good. And there was part of me which had so much joy just to be having this process. Just to be part of the process. That was an interesting moment, right? To see that happen. And, whoa, that's not how I usually am, right? And I said, whoa, there's something magical here. Yeah. Just from kind of embracing the whole process, whatever it is, ups, downs, painful, not painful. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Mary. And Mary Page, please.
One of the things that feels very sacred to me is my husband and I prepare our meals together, and we have a big work table, and we're at one on each side of the table chopping vegetables, and there has this quality of community and doing something sacred in terms of preparing food that's really healthy. So that's one thing. And then today, just by chance, was a very wonderful day. We went to the farmer's market and I got some lilacs that smell just heavenly, you know, like so much like spring. And then was able to just sit and listen to an oratorio by Handel in the afternoon. And this, you know, this music that it talk about, you know, spiritual uplifting music, just incredible. So just this kind of very similar to poetry, but for me, it's music is the thing that uplifts my soul. So anyway, just thought I would share that.
Well, thank you. And again, I love just the naming of, by each of us, of what tends to open up this more sacred quality or whatever language we use. You know, the cooking together, the community, right? The music or the poetry. And, you know, I think, and of knowing, and you know, what one thing I hope for the next week is that, if this resonates, if this theme resonates with people, we can explore this ourselves for the week. And then we can come back and say, here are some further supports that I found for this sense of the sacred. We've named a lot already that I didn't personally name, right? That are coming out just in the sharing, which I love, you know, I love that. And so, just to see what's there. And I think, Vita, did you want to speak as well?
Well, I was, but time is running out. First of all, I just want to thank you. There's something about your sharing your personal experience that somehow, I'm trying to find the word, I've written it down a half a dozen times, I can't find it, But somehow it enriches the practice for me to hear your personal path or your personal experience. So thank you. And I wanted to mention about community, and I know we've mentioned this before. What helps keep me sort of on track, as we all know, I'm not on real track, but sort of on track, is I have a weekly buddy. And yeah, we've been talking together, how many years, I cannot remember, many, many, many years, maybe 8, but I don't know, long time. And we talk every Friday morning, sometimes a half hour, sometimes a little less, but it keeps me on track, and it reminds us both of what our intentions are.
Well,
so I just want to strongly, and it is part of community, it also keeps me connected to Sangha. So I just wanted to share that. And thank you very, very much for tonight's talks.
Yeah, thanks so much, Rita. Thanks for naming that. It's something that was on my mind earlier that I didn't name also, but that another, you know, that we could probably, if we share, probably bring out other dimensions of community, but simply that once a week sharing. I have the same thing personally. I have a close friend I've shared with. I think for me, it's been about 7 years, very similar to you. And we talk once a week. It's probably about half an hour. And it's really crucial and enriching. And there's a level of trust and vulnerability. And in my case, we both have a theme. One of the themes that we go into is enlivening the continuity of awareness in daily life. How do we, you know, and supporting ourselves to remember that, right? It's a lot of this is just support for remembering, right?